Okay, for this evening's Dharma talk, again, I was searching around until, I'm not even searching, I didn't have time to even search for what I was going to speak about this evening, but someone gave me a beautiful topic about 2 minutes before I came in. And the topic of this evening's Dharma talk is on endurance, because there are times in our life when we have to endure, when the going gets tough. And as the old saying goes, when the going gets tough, the tough come to Dhammaloka Buddhist Center on a Friday evening to listen to a Dhamma talk. In other words, that in this teaching which we give of really positive attitudes, training the mind, all these very skillful means of Buddhism, which has been developed over 25, 26 centuries, these can actually really help you bear with the difficult times of our life. And actually bear with them in such a way that you can gain a huge amount of wisdom, a huge amount of compassion, to actually to use those dark times for positive growth. And so every one of us, from time to time, has to be able to bear with things. Look at me, I've been bearing with being an abbot for the last 12 years. Oh, my goodness. So you have to have some degree of endurance. So this evening I'm going to talk about what that endurance really means. Now, first of all, there's the stupid endurance, which is the tough guy endurance, where when things are painful, when they're difficult, one just stands one's ground as if one is some Rambo, thinking that you'd be able to resist just the flow of negativity, of pain, of difficulty in one's life. And if anyone has ever tried that, you know that sometimes you can't really keep going for very long. You know, sometimes it's the arrogance which we sometimes have, thinking we're really tough. The point being that willpower will never be strong enough. Instead, in Buddhism, we use something else we call wisdom power. Not willpower, wisdom power. For example, that in a 2 or 3 weeks' time, we have one of the holiest times of the year in Buddhism, the Vaisak ceremony. Here we're holding it on the 22nd of May. It's the anniversary of the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and final passing away. And I recall the first major Buddhist ceremony which I went to celebrate that day was when I was a student, 18-year-olds in Cambridge. And I was just so inspired by the story of the Buddha's enlightenment. Because a monk came to read out that story. And I remember the most inspiring part was where the monk said that after being searching for so many years for truth, for enlightenment, for freedom, the Buddha sat down under a tree and resolved, even if my blood dries up, even though my bones turn to dust, I will not move from this seat until I have gained complete and utter enlightenment. When I heard that, I thought, wow. I was so inspired. I couldn't wait to get back to my little room in college. And there in my room, I sat down and said, well, if the Buddha could do it, so could I. I've been meditating for about 3 months by this time. And in the arrogance of a young man, I said, right, this is it. Even if my blood dries up and my bones turn to dust, I'm not going to move from my cushion. Actually, not one cushion, it was about 3 or 4. Until I attained full enlightenment. I was a busy young man. I had many things to do in life. I had to get enlightenment out of the way so I can get on with other things. You know how much time it takes to meditate. So I sat there. Now, before, I'd only managed about 20 minutes at most. You know what it was like when you start meditating? Here, you're really, really good. You do half an hour every Friday. That's wonderful. It took me a long time to reach half an hour. But there I was, 20 minutes. 25, 30 minutes. I got to about 40, just under 40 minutes, when I was in utter agony. Everything was burning with pain. And I thought, no, I'm going to push through. I'm going to endure even though my bones turn to dust, my blood dries up. That's my resolution. I can't stop now. I lasted another minute. And when I opened my eyes, it was just so disappointing because not only had I not become enlightened, my blood was still wet and my bones were still as they were when I started. And I realized that there's more to this than just willpower. And sometimes one understands that such endurance, that was just a stupid endurance when I thought I could actually fight my way to enlightenment. But sometimes that we can do the same in our other little struggles of life, just to endure. I've got a pain, I've got a difficulty, I've got a divorce, I've lost my job, I'm getting old, somebody's dying, I'm very sick. How often do we have that same sort of attitude as I had as a stupid young man? I can push through this. I'm strong enough to do this. I will last. Who does that cancer think it is? I'm better than that cancer. And we stand our ground like that with just pure willpower, arrogance to think that we're in control and masters of the universe. And of course, when that happens, most people actually make things much worse. For me, not only did I not get enlightened, but I was aching and in pain for quite a few hours afterwards. I pushed too far. So that is not the correct way of enduring, not through willpower. Instead, we use what sometimes we call wisdom power. So I say, what's happening there? What is the problem? Instead of just forcing it, we investigate and find out exactly what is happening. But sometimes when we're sort of in pain, when we're aching, and sometimes, have you ever had that time when you can't stand the pain anymore? You've had enough. When you really investigate and use wisdom power on that, sometimes you're end of your endurance. You can't take it any longer. Enough. Now what's happening there? As a Buddhist, we really investigate. Sometimes what we call investigation is well summed up by the metaphor when what you're really afraid of, when the ghost is running after you. If you're keeping running in the opposite direction, you never know what that ghost is. Whether it's fear of pain, whether it's fear of death, whatever it is you're afraid of, which keeps you running away. I can't stand it any longer. There comes a time in this metaphor of being chased by a ghost when we turn around and we face the ghost. And a strange thing happens when you face a ghost. The ghost goes, ah, and the ghost runs away. It's one of the things I've said here on this seat before. I found out that ghosts are very, very afraid of monks. And they're afraid of you if you're confident enough. And you see a ghost, you go, and scare the ghost away. But now this is also a metaphor. In other words, it's a simile, because sometimes what happens is what we're afraid of when we're running the opposite direction, it will always have power over us. So if we're always running away from pain, say, pain will always be in control, have power over us, and we'll be just a servant, a slave of these physical feelings. So there comes a time when we just turn around and we look at what's really going on. And this is where we really investigate. And what actually is happening? What do you see? As soon as you actually face pain, you know, or any difficulty here, you find the reason why you can't stand it is not the pain, but it's the thought of longer. How long is this going to last? Thinking is going to last forever. It's when the mind actually projects into the future that pain, difficulty appears to be unendurable. Which is why that wise person will always remember about the flux of life, impermanence, change. You know it's not going to last. There's that story which many of you might know, when I had this terrible scrub typhus about 4 or 5 weeks in a hospital in northeast Thailand. Not a very pleasant place to be, and a very awful illness. And I was so happy one day when my teacher, Ajahn Chah, came for a visit. I never expected it. He was already a big monk, and I was only just a newly ordained little monk. When this great master comes to see you, wow, you felt so good. Until Ajahn Chah opened his mouth. Because what he said, as you, many of you have heard this before, what he said was, Bama Wangsa, you're either going to get better or you're going to die. And then he left. He didn't waste time, this great monk. He had been, and I thought, that's not what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear how you're feeling today. I hope you're getting better. You're getting some nice food. You know. No, he just didn't mess around. Straight to the point. But when I thought about that, is this how true that is? I didn't really have to be afraid of the pain and the sickness. It wasn't going to last. Either I'd die, and then the pain would end, or I'd get better. And as it happened, obviously, because I'm here now, I got better. But that's always something which pointed out to me the problem, or one of the great problems of pain, because we think it's going to last forever. We can't see the end of it. And so the wisdom power which we use to have endurance is to know this too will pass. Whatever it is you're experiencing, you know it will always change. When we think it's going to last forever, only then we will not be able to stand it. When we know it's always going to be changing, then there's no problem anymore. We don't know when it's going to disappear. And very often, it disappears when we least expect it to go. This is what happens. So whenever you are in those situations, it's one of the basic Buddhist teachings to always remember, this too will pass. This was the story of the Emperor's Ring. I had to amend this story in my little book, the original story, which I read somewhere else. Even though it's an ancient story, because someone else published it, they thought, maybe they might be in trouble. So I just changed the story very briefly in my book, Opening the Door of Your Heart. But the original story was an emperor, a young man who came to a position of power when he was still immature. And every time things were going well in his life, in his kingdom, they'd have parties and celebrations. In fact, so many parties and celebrations that he didn't do enough work. And so the good times never lasted very long. And when things started getting bad in the kingdom, when the citizens were revolting, when they were rioting, when there was lack of peace, when crime was going up. I think Mr. Gallup understands this. When there was problems in the kingdom, he'd get so depressed, he'd just stay in his room and sulk. You know what it's like when you're depressed, you just can't do anything. And so because of that, the bad times lasted longer than normal. And of course, the ministers thought, this is no good. We have to help our emperor. But emperors are not very amenable to advice. They think they know it all. That's why they're emperors. And so they had to be very smart. They got this device, this trick. They presented the king, the emperor, with a ring. That's why it's called the story of the Emperor's Ring. A very simple gold ring, except on the outside was engraved the words, "This too will pass." They told the emperor to keep that ring on and always look at it, which he did, and that changed his whole life and also the prosperity of the kingdom. Because when things were going well, he would still look at the ring and say, this too will pass. He never took the good times for granted. So he worked even in times of prosperity. And because of that, the good times, they lasted longer than expected. And when the cycles of nature did turn, he never got so depressed or upset. He could endure because he knew, looking at his ring, reminding him of a truth which he should really remember and should really know. He reminded him, this too will pass. That gave him hope. It gave him encouragement to keep working even through the difficult times. And of course, the difficult times never lasted so long. The good times lasted long, the bad times not so long, and he became a very successful emperor and a very happy person. Simple story. Some of you have heard it before, but it needs repeating because it's incredibly powerful. What it does is it teaches us one of the wisdom powers, one of those faculties, so that when life is tough, when we go into those pits of depression, despair, grief, whatever happens, when it looks like it's really black, we always understand this too will pass. And it does. I used to give that story very regular to prisoners in jail. When I used to go and visit the many prisons here in Western Australia, imagine what it's like being a prisoner, being a criminal, wearing the green. When you actually put yourself in that position, shame, lack of freedom, humiliation, and sometimes you know that's not going to just be one or two days, sometimes many years. Sometimes prisoners get depressed. Sometimes there are suicides in those cells. You can imagine why. I think I read in the papers that Reni Rifkin committed suicide because of the pain, or the shame rather. Because they don't realize this too will pass. I asked those prisoners, I said, I don't know how long your sentence is, but what would it be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? You've been looking back at this time, which was so terrible for you while you were right in it, and you look back upon it, I don't know, maybe even with a bit of nostalgia, I don't know. But at least you look back upon it with a completely different perspective than when you were right in the middle of it. You know it will pass, and it does pass. And the day does come when it passes, when you walk out of that jail, when you're free. In the same way, you know that whatever you have to experience in life, whatever difficulty, whatever problem, you know the day must come when you walk out of that problem, when you walk out of that depression, when you walk out of that grief, that problem. The day does come. You're free. Why can't we remember that time when we're right in the middle of the pits? A good metaphor description of this, which comes from nature, for those of you who know the cycles of nature in Northern Europe. Have you ever been sort of in a forest or in the moors or the pastures at winter time in Northern Europe? Now, I was brought up in England. I know this very clearly. All the leaves fall from the trees. And the trees are just like skeletons. They look very similar to what you see after a bushfire here in Western Australia, except the trees aren't black. But again, there's no leaves. Everything is dead in winter time. Nothing is moving. It's all just so bleak and so grey. I'm not going to tell the Earl Grey story now, but I'll tell you one thing. Well, first time when I went to visit London in November time, December time, my brother told me that they just discovered a cure for depression. In fact, they had a name for this type of depression which happens in Northern Europe at that time of the year. All they did to cure the depression was anyone who was really down, they'd put them in a room, they'd dress them up in Hawaiian shirts, they'd turn the light up, they'd have very, very loud, sort of vigorous music, and just the stimulus of bright lights, loud music, whatever it was, it stimulated the mind out of depression. That's what it was. In the greyness of their life, where everybody in that time in England wears overcoats, they're all the same colour, there's no gender anymore when you go and see those people in England that time of the year, boys, girls, even monks, they probably all look the same, just all grey overcoats, or maybe the monks in brown overcoats, I don't know, but certainly you can't really see much life going on. But in this particular simile, somebody told me once that when it is winter time in your life, When it seems to be all greyness in the skies, when it's cold and gloomy, when there's nothing green growing in your life, always remember that after winter, inevitably comes the spring. And even during that cold winter, you know that just a few inches under the surface of the ground, there are seeds. There is potential life and growth. All those beautiful flowers of the springtime are right there in this moment, just a few inches under the surface. They may even have germinated now. They're growing, they're pushing up. Sure, you can't see them, but you know they're there. You know spring does always follow winter. In the same way, the tough times of your life, the depressive times, the lonely times, the times of grief, the times of loss, the times of disappointment, you know that spring is following. In the wintry days of your life, you know something is moving under the surface. If you look carefully, with deep mindfulness, you can sometimes see things moving in the deepest depressions of your life. Things are happening. You know this too will not pass. In fact, you can almost intuit it passing. Now you know what I mean about this too will pass. You know it is going to change. It has changed. It's always changed. That's what your life has been. Seasons of summers and winters. Of sunny days and rainy cold days. That's everybody's life. But why is it that people don't manage to keep the head above water in these changes is because we forget. This is why we need reminder. We need a little ring on our fingers. I was just counseling one lady. She seems to have got over her troubles. And she says she's going to buy herself a ring now. She's going to get a simple gold ring. She can get someone to engrave that message on it because it helped her enormously. So, this too will pass. After a while, though, we actually look even deeper into the dark days of our life and the difficulties. Sometimes we have to keep pressing on, but sometimes if we keep pressing on, it's going to pass. When's it going to pass? I hope it's going to pass today. When is spring coming? Ajahn Brahm said, spring is coming. It's not working. It doesn't work for me. Give me my money back. A tally of all the donations I've ever given to the Buddhist Society, I want it all back. It doesn't work. Now, of course, again, one is not understanding completely. Okay, it's going to pass, but actually you can make it pass much quicker if you're wise. So how do you make these things pass quicker? When you learn about sort of meditation, you also learn about life. What you do sitting down for half an hour is what I call like a microcosm, a reflection of how we live one's life. So what are you doing when you're meditating? Number one, I say, you know, keep in the present moment. If you keep in the present moment, there's no thing about the future anymore. You don't fear the future. The sort of the endurance becomes very easy, but it's still not enough. The other part of meditation, which many of you know I talk about a lot, the only way to get real success in meditation, to get peace and depth in meditation, is to put joy into your meditation. To put joy in there. And that's why I ask people when they start meditating, when you become aware of your body, become aware of your mouth. And for goodness sake, turn the edges up. That's right. Have a little smile. It does make it easier to meditate. First time that I learned this, again, back to my student days, I was not into sport at all. Sport for me was fun. Until some people used to take this sport really seriously. And I couldn't understand, I thought it was stupid. But I was one day, I was in a boat, you know, on the river with, you know, eight other men, one cox and seven other people. And we're in a race. And my goodness, that was a long way we had to race. And by the halfway mark, I'd had enough. I was tired. I didn't have any energy left pulling those blooming oars. was just too much for me. And then there was, many of you have seen these boat races. They have them obviously here in Perth on the Canning River. There's always like a coach in the small rivers in England. They're just on a bicycle by the towpath over here. They're in little boats. And all the coach did, he shouted at me and he told me, he said, "You're making a really ugly face. Smile." And I probably was making an ugly face. Same as sometimes when I open my eyes during meditation. Some of you make ugly faces as well. It's enough to make even a monk depressed sometimes, seeing when you're meditating. But he told me, he said, "Smile, grin." Now, at least I was malleable enough when you're very young. You're open to suggestions. And so I did that. I did smile. I grinned. And straight away, just the oar was easier to pull. I had more energy. The whole thing got better. It was obviously all coaches know that trick. But do you know that trick to coach yourself in your life? The other thing when times gets very difficult, put fun into what you're doing. It doesn't matter just how difficult it is. You can always manage a smile. And it does, through that smile, become a little easier. This is why at funerals I tell jokes. When you go visit people in a hospital, I tell jokes again. Sometimes I get into trouble. I always remember this one lady who rang me up. It was the first time she had a very serious illness. It was only a hysterectomy, but she was over in... I can say that because I'm a man. I saw a few people think, how can he say that? So she had a hysterectomy, and she was very sort of upset about the whole thing. So she called me, and I went to visit her in, was it King Edward Memorial Hospital? And as soon as I walked into her room, she said, "Ajahn Brahm, please, no jokes." And when someone says that, I mean, it encourages you, doesn't it? The poor lady. You know, she had this big sort of wound in her side. I tried my very best, but it was beyond my ability. But who cares? I mean, she enjoyed it, so never mind. The point being here, when you make fun of sickness, then people don't feel so miserable anymore. Because you've got to do it in the right way, because sometimes you're not laughing at them, you're laughing with them. You're trying to get people to say, you know, smile with your sickness. That way, the thing is easy to endure. It's the same if anyone comes here and they're having a divorce. I say, laugh. I say, no, only the lawyer's laughing, no one else. But you can do that. And when you put a little bit of fun and joy into what you're doing, you find that you're able to achieve much more. The whole thing goes more smoothly. Just the whole of the tough times get much easier to endure. They don't last so long. And they're not so painful. We're actually taking away the pain, the difficulty of life. So it's not just endurance. You know, with standing up, I'm going to, doesn't matter what happens, I'm going to just get through this. It's using wisdom power. Number one is to all pass and seeing if you can put some more fun into what's going on. You do tell a few jokes. You do make it a bit more interesting, more joyful. And then you find it's much easier to get through. You know that just in your day, when life is just all so negative, when people are always finding fault, when you're always picking out what's wrong and you have to manage what's wrong. You know, in your office, in your home, if there's no laughter, life becomes hard to endure. Sometimes people are amazed when they come here on a Friday night and they say, "My goodness, people listen to you for a whole hour? Do you actually lock the doors or something to keep people from going out? How do you manage to actually sit and listen to a lecture for an hour?" Even in, I think, universities, they only go 45 minutes or 50 minutes at very most. But how do you do that? Because you put a few jokes in there every now and again to make it fun, not just interesting, not just informative, but a little bit of fun as well. And then it's so easy to endure. I don't know if any of you had to endure sleeplessness. You know, sometimes it happens to me. Sometimes people give me too much tea. I accept it, so I'm not really there for it, I suppose. But because it's just my conditioning. I was born in England. I think the next thing after you move off your mother's milk, you go into tea. I didn't have a chance. So sometimes people give you lots of tea, and when it gets to late at night, you should be going to sleep, but you can't. So how do you enjoy? Have you ever had like sleeplessness, insomnia? How do you deal with that? Have fun. What do you mean, so you can't have fun with insomnia? When you wake up in the morning, isn't it just wonderful to be in your nice, soft, warm, cozy bed? The trouble is, when you wake up in the morning, you can't really enjoy it because you've got to get up and go to work or do something. So I got this idea that, okay, you know, I can't sleep at night. What a wonderful thing, because I can enjoy the most comfortable place in my whole monastery, in my bed. Who wants to go? Because it's wonderful to have this beautiful, nice feeling, the nice blankets, nice and cozy and warm. Who wants to go to sleep? This is nice. Because when you get up, it's cold, especially these mornings. You've got to have to go to work. Or some monk comes along and tells you their problems. Or the phone rings and you ring up me with your problems. We call that dial a monk. That's a terrible thing, dial a monk service. It's amazing. It's amazing what we get for dial a monk. Sometimes you've got to chant because someone's just sick. Can you please chant on the phone? I've done that before many times. Or chant for a dog, whatever. It's all sorts of stuff. No, don't put down dogs. They're nice. But the point is that sometimes that when you're in that bed and there's no phones, no one can get to you, no one's going to ask you a question, no one's going to come up to me when I'm in bed and say, Ajahn Brahm, just one more question. Just one, please. They'll never come up to you and say, can you please come and sign a book? Not when I'm in bed. So it's a wonderful place to be. So what I did, I said, I'm enjoying myself. And when you actually took away that negativity, because a lot of time I realized that what insomnia was, the reason why it was a problem was because if I don't go to sleep soon, I'm going to be in big trouble. There's only a couple of hours left. If I don't get to sleep soon, that was the worry which was keeping me awake. It was a negativity which was adding to the problem. So it wasn't just endurance. I used wisdom. And I said, I'm going to enjoy. I don't want to go to sleep. Next thing I knew, I woke up a few hours later. Because you'd relax. This is wisdom power. So a lot of time, when you're wise, you don't need to endure. The problem disappears. What the Buddha said, and this is basic Buddhism, but powerful Buddhism, he said, suffering, difficulties, problems, there's two parts to it. Please always remember this. There's a physical part and there's a mental part. There's the way of the world, nature. You can't do much about that. Somnia, sickness, cancers, deaths, sometimes divorces, separations. People coming, people going. That's life. The seasons of the year. Winter, spring, summer, autumn. You can't do much about that. The physical part is our life. But the mental part, that suffering, the Buddha said, you can do something about. How you relate to what you have to experience. What you do about it. What you think about it. How you perceive it inside. Because there's two parts to say sickness. The physical pain, but also the mental pain. There's two parts to insomnia. The fact you can't sleep and whether... how you react to that. I don't want to sleep. It's terrible. It's awful. There's two parts to depression. Just the low energy. And the fact, I don't want to be depressed. You understand that second part. I don't want to be depressed. I don't want to be sick. I don't want to be in hospital. I don't want to be old. I don't want to die. I don't want to give a talk every Friday evening on a, oh, I don't want to do this. When I go, I'm going to Sydney tomorrow, another talk tomorrow night. I don't want to do this. Now, see, that's a mental suffering. So instead of adding the mental suffering to life, what wisdom does, which means endurance, is just so easy. You don't try and change the situation. I don't go and say, oh, leave me alone. I don't want to give a talk tonight. You don't go and say, oh, leave me alone. I don't want to go to Sydney tomorrow. You don't go and say, I just want to be a simple monk. You go and you've got all my talks. I've just seen in the library, they've got these MP3 talks. They've got, I don't know how many talks they've got on these MP3 CD players anymore. Look, I will give you one each for free. Have an put it on your iPod so you never have to come to Dhammaloka Center ever again. You've got all the talks, hundreds of them. You can listen to them at home if you leave me alone. But look, that's not the way it works. What is most important is, instead of being so complaining, so negative, so grumpy, giving a talk or not giving a talk is not the problem. Being able to sleep or not being able to sleep is not the problem. Being sick or being healthy, being old, being young is not the problem. As I said last week, it's how you are these things. Your mental attitude towards these things. The Buddha said that's what you can do. So you don't just have to endure when it's in pain or difficulty, when things aren't going your way. Look inside of your mind. Be mindful and say, what is my reaction to this? How am I dealing with this? And you can put fun into your life. When you put fun into the moment, when you're laying bricks, oh, it's hard, it's under the sun, make fun of it. See if you can, lay the bricks the wrong way around or whatever it is. That's actually how you get innovation through playing. A lot of times people have actually put fun into what they're doing, done things differently, messed around, and they've got these amazing new discoveries. For example, just on the cutting edge of culinary expertise, of gastronomy, is the monks sitting in front of you right now. Because when you give us food, we don't know what we're putting in our bowl, but it all gets mixed together. And we get some combinations which no one has ever tasted before. This is research. And we found some amazing combinations. One of my favorites is custard on spaghetti. You try it. You see, I told you we're on the cutting edge. We've eaten things which you haven't even dreamt about yet. Of course, many of our experiments go wrong. It tastes terrible. But nevertheless, now and again, I had some ice cream today on my fish. That was nice. That's true. That's because ice cream went on the fish. That wasn't so nice. I must agree. That was a mistake. But nevertheless, when you make fun of these things, you see, this is actually where we get growth. Where we get sort of new ideas, where there's like creation and stuff like that. So when you put fun into your life that way, you don't have to endure anymore. What used to be sort of negative, what do I have to do this for? Actually, it's not endurance anymore. You don't have to force yourself. You don't have to stand strong. It's not a Rambo anymore. The Buddha is so wise. You are so wise. But all those things which other people say, oh, that must be so hard to do that. You say, no, it's actually good fun. That's why some people say, you monks, how do you live like that? It must be terrible. No sex, no movies. Just no, 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 no. That's why they call the female monks nuns. For some reason, isn't it? Just none of anything. So people say, how can you do that? And now look, you've all seen, we don't hide in our monastery. You come and visit us. You hang out with the monks sometimes. You go on like pilgrimages to India and you're with the monks all the time. Do you know that we, you know, this is how we are all the time. Just, you know, messing around, having fun. And sometimes people think I should be a bit more serious, but I refuse to be so serious. I put fun into my life because that's how I could endure this. And there's no enjoyment anymore. It's just like good fun. So you have to do something. Okay. Let's make it joyful. And also, let's make it useful as well. Because that's the other part with endurance. Because sometimes you think you're wasting time. What I mean by that is just saying, I've just got to get through this so I can go and do something else. This is not valuable. This is not worthwhile. I just got to, you know, just bear with this until something more useful, more wonderful is going to come along. Now, that type of endurance, again, is missing the wonderful opportunities of life. This is why my teacher Ajahn Chah always used to teach us the meaning of these old words which you hear now every now and again. You know that I'm called Ajahn Brahm, Ajahn Sister Wayama of the Nuns Monastery, Ajahn Chatamala, Ajahn Yanadama, Ajahn. You know what this word Ajahn means? It means teacher. And I understood what this really means when, in the first years when I was a monk, one of the things we had to endure was mosquitoes. These were the jungles. This was a time when you didn't have mosquito repellent or fly screens. And they were all over the place, these mosquitoes. And they were just so vicious. They really hurt. And so we'd complain. Ajahn Chah, help. You know, we're not born into this type of country. You know, we're hurting. It's giving us problems. Please help us. Get some repellent or something. And what the teacher said, what Ajahn Chah said, he said, now, these mosquitoes, you don't have to endure them. You can enjoy them. Now I'm going to start calling these Ajahn Mosquito. Because Ajahn means teacher. He said they're going to teach you things. And my goodness, they taught me a lot. They taught me the benefit of mosquito repellents. No, they didn't. They taught me a lot about how to meditate. Because you know in some of these Zen monasteries, they have these monks with a big stick. And if you start sort of nodding, they sort of hit you on the back of the stick with a stick. These mosquitoes, it's not just one of them, there's hundreds of them. And if you don't make your mind still and peaceful, they come and bite you. I found out later, it was only about a couple of years ago, in a medical article in one of these journals, that mosquitoes are attracted to the carbon dioxide coming out of your pores. That is what attracts them. The higher metabolism you have, the more carbon dioxide is secreted, the more you are visible to mosquitoes. So the more you worry about these mozzies, the more you think, the more you sort of, the more your metabolism goes up, the more carbon dioxide comes out, the more they come and bother you. That's true. So if you meditate, make your mind very calm and peaceful, then your metabolism goes down, and mosquitoes literally can't find you. That's how Ajahn Mosquito taught me how to meditate. Because if I worried and started thinking, they'd get me. If I made my mind very still, very peaceful, relax, slow down, then they couldn't find me. And it happened many times. You'd sit there and there'd be hundreds of them around. And afterwards, you wouldn't feel them, but afterwards there's no bumps on your arms or on your head. They couldn't find me. So they taught me how to meditate. Same way that pain can teach you a lot of wisdom. Just how to stop controlling. How to let go. Because the difficulties in life, they are our teachers. And they teach us what real life is all about. Sometimes that we have our loved ones. And we all know that Buddhism says, be careful of attachments. when that person dies or they go off somewhere else, we understand what attachments really are. But we should at least learn from that so we understand what life is all about. When you understand these things, it's not that you have to live by yourself, afraid of relationships. What it means is you understand the rules of the game. You understand that people will come together, but not for eternity, only for a while. This too will pass. You know that from the very beginning. If you know that from the very beginning, the whole thing with relationships completely changes. What Ajahn Chah used to say, holding up a glass, he always used to hold up glasses like I hold up this glass. He says, see this glass, he would say. He said, can you see the crack in it? And I said, Ajahn Chah, you need some glasses. There's no crack in the glass. And he said, there is, but it's microscopic. One day, this glass will fall over, or someone will kick it, and that crack which is in here right now will open up, and the glass will shatter. He said, because that crack is in here, therefore you have to look after your glass. Therefore you have to care for it, because if you don't, it won't last very long. And then he explained the simile. He looked at me and said, Brahma Wangsa, you've got a crack in you as well. Not in my head, I'm not cracked in the head, it's all over. You may not be able to see that yet, but you have your potential death, which is there in you at this moment. One day you're going to die. You've got a crack like this glass. Because of that, you have to care for your body. Because it's not always going to be there. It's the same with the person you live with. There's a crack in them. One day, they're going to die, or they're going to part. That's why you have to care. If this glass, he said, was plastic, unbreakable, then you would need to care about it. You could drop it, you could kick it, who cares? Because the glass is fragile, that is why we have to care. Because your relationships are fragile. You know that one day they will go. That is why you care. If once you got married, you had to live with each other forever and ever and ever and ever, not just one lifetime, for the whole eternity, you wouldn't need to care anymore. Now you understand what truth is. These understandings of the passing away of things, when it does pass away, when the relationship ends, when the people leave, when your children go off to other parts of the world with their own partners, when your best friend dies from a cancer, when everything disappears, you'll know, ah, I expected that. The glass is now cracked. But during the time it was whole, I cared for it. Where would there be any sadness? It'll be just the truth. You've done your very best. You've enjoyed the time we've had together. And now it's time to part. What a beautiful part of life that is. It's not attachment. It's not just being afraid of relationships. It's this beautiful middle way where we understand the rules of the game. We understand what life truly is. And then there's no such thing as endurance anymore. When the glass breaks, it's not painful. We can even put joy in that and celebrate a parting. When one relationship ends, there's the opportunity for another one. Isn't there? Or if you're fed up with relationships, there's the opportunity for going to the monastery. There's always opportunities there. Always Ajahn's teaching us what can happen next. So that way, when we add not just joy, but wisdom and understanding into the phases of our life, especially those things which we took as negative phases, things which we thought were hard, were very unpleasant. It's incredible they're not unpleasant anymore. Even what other people would have to go and see psychiatrists for, go through therapy for, and be so upset for, you find you're not. You don't have to endure anymore. You have wisdom, you have joy. And I've seen many Buddhists do this. Incredible just to see, just their power. They have to go through these terrible operations. But they're just smiling all the time. And they mean it. They're just told they're going to die. And they're cracking jokes. I will always remember one of our disciples years ago. She was always having trouble breathing. She thought it was allergies. But when she got it checked out, it was lung cancer. When she got it checked out, far too late to do anything. Waste of time even having any surgery or chemotherapy. So as soon as the results came through, she called me up. She was at, was it Charlie Gardens or Royal Perth? Forget now. But anyway, she called me up. I went there straight away to see her. And by her bedside, it was only a couple of hours since she'd been diagnosed as terminal cancer, no hope. She started cracking jokes. She was a Thai. She said, tell my Thai friends they can come and see me, but not now. They can come and see me in my coffin. And that, she was just a great fan. And she, 2 or 3 hours earlier, she'd been, you know, out of the blue, she'd never expected this. She'd been told she was going to die. So that was what I call a real wise Buddhist. But the trouble was, as soon as I spent an hour discussing her funeral arrangements and what to do about her children, when I was walking out, this nurse, she was the matron, the sister of the ward, the head honcho in this ward, said, oh, I'm so glad you've come. So why? Oh, come over here. She almost pulled me aside into this room and said, that lady you've just seen, she's in denial. She doesn't realise she's going to die. And I said, oh, look, come off it. She just spent 1 hour planning her funeral, doing everything. And I always remember just this look of complete confusion on the face of this nurse. She said, but she's happy. I said, well, why not? We're all going to die sometime. She knows when she's going to die. She can plan for it. She's had a good life. Why shouldn't she be happy? Why not? If you're a Christian, you're going to go to heaven. Why shouldn't you be happy? It's much better than over here. If you're a Buddhist, she made good karma. She made lots of good karma. She knows she can have a wonderful life afterwards. If you don't believe in heaven, you don't believe in rebirth, you're going to disappear. So isn't that happy? Because otherwise, what's the alternative? Nursing homes, you know, walking frames. Is that really what you want? So she was happy. And I said, look, what's wrong with her? But the point was, she'd never seen this before, this nurse. And she'd obviously been in the business for a long time. And that was actually marvellous, actually, to see that. To see that this lady, who just been said she had cancer, was about to die. She didn't need endurance. She had wisdom. She had fun. Sure, her body was hurting, but her mind was at peace. Two parts of suffering, physical part, the mental part. Physical stuff you can't do much about. You will die one day. You've got a crack in you. Your relationship has got a crack in it. No matter how perfect you think your partner is, one day it has to happen. But don't be afraid of that. That is Ajahn separation. It's going to teach you a lot. And if you know how to deal with this, make your mind peaceful. Learn from it. Grow from it. See if you can put fun into no matter what you're doing. And that way, you understand how endurance really happens. No longer do you need to grit your teeth. You just take your teeth out. You take the problem away, which is a mental problem. And that is how we learn endurance. So I'm very happy that you've endured this talk. And you've laughed a lot, so you've understood it. So thank you for listening to The Buddhist Way of Endurance. Any questions about today's talk? My recipe book. Oh, yeah. I think one day, I've already given you a recipe. Try that. Custard on spaghetti. I dare you. I challenge you to try it. Give it to your husband tomorrow. And then you'll also be able to understand about how to endure separations. There you go. Chili pavlova. Pavlova. Yeah, you know, you got pavlova and you put chili sauce on top. Why are all of you just screwing up your faces? How many of you have ever tried pavlova with chili on? So how do you know, for goodness sake? Give it a try. I never tried it. You can tell me afterwards. Okay, thanks a lot. Now we have the announcements. Thank you for listening. Ahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.